Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%. APR, 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
You want answers!
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight? What?
Take your stinking paws off me, you damn dirty ape!
At the Movies on BFM 89.9.
Hello, I'm Umar Pagan, PK Pagan, alongside Ian McNally. The folks at Netflix gave us very early access to Marvel's The Punisher. The both of us have seen all 13 episodes. We binge-watched the crap out of it. And here we are to tell you what we thought of this next installment in the, I guess, Marvel Netflix universe.
The MNU.
The MNU. And actually, before we get into that, it was delayed, right? So there was supposed to be a trailer that was going to be launched at New York Comic Con, and then the shootings happened, and they delayed the panel session at New York Comic Con, and they also delayed the release of the series, I think, by just over a month.
Yeah, and it worked out well for them in that all their trailers were hiding the release date anyway.
It did. However, I have to say this. I mean, just last week, there was another shooting in America. And, you know, as I was watching this, I think the thing that frustrated me the most about reading the news was, of course, all of these shootings keep happening. And I don't know why they keep postponing the release dates for these things, because it happens every day of every week of every month of every year.
Yeah.
And when ideology and politics get in the way of people actually dying, right, it becomes absolutely pointless to actually pretend like any of this matters, right?
And at this point in America's history, if you're waiting for the day where there isn't a shooting, you'll never release a show ever.
You'll never release a show ever.
Unfortunately.
Rant over. It just worked me up to no end. But anyway, back to Marvel's The Punisher. This stars Jon Bernthal as The Punisher, reprising his role from Daredevil Season 2. It's got Deborah Ann Woll as Karen Page. And it's got new characters, Eben Moss Bachrach as David Lieberman, a very famous character called Micro in The Punisher comics. It's got Ben Barnes playing Billy Russo, and Amber Rose Riva playing Dinah Madani, who is this, you know, hard as anything Homeland Security agent, right? The show is actually run by Steve Lightfoot. I think this is his first role as showrunner on a Marvel program. Mm-hmm. He actually showran Hannibal, which was a fantastic series on NBC for 3 seasons, of course, based on the Silence of the Lambs, Hannibal.
Yep.
And he actually started his producing and writing career, wait for this, you'll appreciate this, on Casualty.
Oh, really?
Yes. He wrote a ton of episodes and produced a ton of episodes of Casualty, which is a UK soap.
BBC's ER, which came out before ER, basically.
But, you know,
and it's run for some
lasted forever.
Yeah.
Right? So what do we think?
I mean, it's a very different show from what they've done before. I mean, not only because The Punisher is a very different type of character, but also the plot. Like, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, the Defenders, Iron Fist, they're all kind of working to prevent something from happening. Whereas in this, you spend an awful lot of time with Frank just breaking walls. Like, at the very beginning of this show is Frank is burning the Punisher armor jacket.
Within, like, 10 minutes of the show starting, he burns that skull flak jacket. For me, that was interesting.
He grows a beard, puts on a hoodie and a beanie, and becomes the meanest looking white rapper in history.
And there are these ongoing hipster jokes that just don't let up.
Yeah.
But no, he burns that vest, which for me is very interesting because right at the bat, I think Marvel wants you to know they're losing the costume. So this isn't your average superhero show.
Yeah.
Right? I wrote in my notebook as we got to episode 8 or 9 of 13, I said, this might be my favorite Marvel series on Netflix.
Wow.
And I'll tell you why. I enjoyed the fact that this was trying to tell the story about what happens when the state trains people to be killers and the consequences of that, of training men and women to be killers, sending them out to kill people and then come back home and essentially they're bringing their war home. And that's what this story is. It's not a superhero movie. It's a meditation on war and the military and the consequence of bringing that war back home. And I got really caught up in that. And also, they've changed the formula just a little bit in that, you know how a Marvel show, after about five episodes, everything starts picking up pace and going crazy?
Yeah.
In this one, the pace is deliberate throughout. It doesn't actually shift, I feel.
No, but I do feel that hurts a little bit. I think this one, more than the other Marvel shows, for me, fell symptom to that too many episodes. I thought the 13 was probably a little too much. There's a subplot running with another American vet who's like almost... It's almost as if they're holding him out to be like the Punisher's totally messed up, but this kid's even more messed up.
Yeah.
And it could be an interesting counterpoint, but doesn't really counterpoint that much. You know, they don't really deal with each other that much. And as a result, it's not really like, I'm the Dark Mirror of you, or you're me just with more killing or something like that. It's like... That didn't work for me.
But I think that's also because, unlike the other shows we've seen on Netflix, Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, even Iron Fist, all of them seem intent either by purpose or by accident to do good.
Yeah.
Everyone in this show is broken and tainted, even the good guys.
Except
right?
Karen Page, who's nervy as always. Does she ever like build up her confidence at all? And she was actually faking that one time. But every other time someone's talking to her, she's like humming and umming and looking down, except when she's giving her boss crap,
yes,
which is like...
Right.
Leave him alone. Leave like it's like crusading Karen every time. You know what I mean?
But you're right. She is like the sole person or the sole voice of reason and good. She's the good angel on the shoulder, right?
In
everyone
a way,
else
to
is...
the point where like if there is a wrong way and a right way to do things, and the wrong way will put her life in mortal danger, she'll go for that wrong way every time.
In my notes, I've written, except maybe Karen.
Yes. But I think expanding the cast, you need to do that. And it takes a couple of episodes for Frank to shave the beard, for Frank Castle, the Punisher. I did quite enjoy that, like building out the character more, because he burns that jacket because he's killed everyone who's involved in his wife and child's killing. And I don't think if they mentioned it in this show, but it was maybe in the previously on or something. In the Daredevil TV season 2, they brought up the fact that Frank has mild brain damage from the events that killed his wife and son. And for him, he physically can't move on. The trauma of his wife and child's murder is with him physically. It's not something, the wounds literally will never heal.
Right.
Time will never heal those wounds. And I think that's fascinating. And they play with that a lot.
They
for
play
the first
with that a
couple,
lot.
Where there's this recurring, Frank wakes up every morning to the death of his wife every single time.
And that's an awful, awful sequence, especially because it gets cut off.
And there's additions to it and changes to it.
And then when it finally plays out, it is brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's the other thing about the show. This show is probably the most brutal. I mean, we've seen lots of killings, but the kind of hand-to-hand combat that you see in this show and the sheer brutality of punching someone to a pulp that actually happens in the show is intense.
And that's something that's kind of part of the Punisher and something not. Like when they made I think Punisher Warzone was quite violent.
It was.
And made the video game, it was all about these kind of signature interrogation moves that you could do, which were like horrifying, like drilling someone's kneecap or something like that. There are all these kind of little environmental things you could do. But I found it wildly uneven. There's a point in the climax, which is one of the most brutal things I've seen in the big fight with the bad guy. We won't talk about spoilers. That is like horrifying. You know what I'm talking about? But that's like, there's nothing like that in the previous three or four episodes.
There isn't. However, I think that's what they were saving for the very end, because it is also the origin of a major Punisher villain in the comic books, right? Mm. So I think they were saving that for the absolute climax.
But then,
in episode 12, there was another brutal beating to a pulp scene.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's some of that, but some of it is like that. That is stylized and kind of like there's a point behind that violence. In episode 12, it's kind of like this is just like it's an interrogation scene again kind of thing and the payback from that. But like Daredevil had every fight is of a certain level. I felt like this didn't have that. And certain episodes near the back end as well, when you're getting on from 8 and stuff like that, it started to look very Canadian. Did you find that? I think it was maybe they started spending more time outdoors, or the lighting didn't. I mean, did they shoot in Vancouver? They actually shoot in New York. I don't know.
Everything's shot in Vancouver.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of even the home base, I think maybe it was just different directors. It didn't look... Punisher teams up with a guy and they have a kind of a base of operations. And it looks kind of cool, but over the course of the series, it kind of got less cool for me. It seemed like it was overlit. And I was kind of like, just like, this is starting to, maybe my feed was getting the lower. It seemed like high def, and I was able to watch this one on my TV. I wasn't able to. It didn't buffer all the time for me.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So it did seem higher quality. It just seemed maybe the higher quality didn't suit it that well.
Huh. I didn't notice that, actually. I didn't notice any lapses in quality. I was really caught up in the show. I don't know. I enjoy the military thrillers in general, right? You know those military thriller films as well. Not just A Few Good Men, but the kind of action-oriented ones that always feature Sam Jackson, right? Yeah. Those ones. I enjoy those a lot. And this one kind of reminded me of those, only it was grittier and rawer. And just more to the point, I felt that the depictions of military vets and the problems they were going through kind of fit with Punisher's trauma or Frank Castle's dilemma.
Yeah.
And in that sense, I thought the showrunners pulled it off really well, because you didn't have to watch any of the shows before this.
No.
It wasn't an origin story. Thank God for that.
It's very much standalone.
It's very much standalone. It's also, there are no standalone episodes either. Everything is one giant arc. I mean, some things do get resolved quicker than others, but for the most part, everything kind of runs through. Because for the first three or four episodes, you are introduced to characters, and you know, unlike traditional television programming, you don't learn everything about those characters within 5 minutes.
Yeah, they're constantly dropping things into it. And also the characters themselves. There's a revelation that Frank makes to one character in a deposition scene. And it's kind of like you can see on her face that just like totally shakes her to the core. With these shows, especially when you're binge watching them, there's a sense of, you know, tension getting through them. Like the Daredevil ones is trying to figure out like who the Kingpin is and what that kind of stuff is going on there. With Jessica Jones, it was trying to stop the Purple Man. With this, it does spend a few episodes setting out the players, but then you know who the players are. There's only one minor revelation that has to be made to Frank near the end. And that revelation, I thought, was incredibly badly handled on the stairwell. Something happens and everyone makes the correct assumption. And things like that started building up for me. There's another point where Micro is incredibly squeamish at one point, and then two episodes later, he's talking about sewing up squirrels and cats when he was a kid. And things like that started to stick out with me a bit. I think, again, I was getting impatient at that point. I was like, all right, let's finish this up. I think those 13 episodes, this might have worked a little bit better for me if it was like a 10 episode.
Or an 8 episode series. Because I think that worked very well for Defenders. I think keeping Defenders to 8 episodes really was tight. I mean, yeah, I think I agree with you there. The show could have been tighter. The other thing I was quite thrilled about was the fact that it wasn't a show about guns. Because that was my biggest concern. Given everything that was going on in America, I was worried that, and you know, in those early days of the comics, even though we knew Punisher wasn't a superhero, he wasn't even an anti-hero. The word hero should have nothing to do with the Punisher.
He's a very broken damaged
man. He was just a broken damaged man. He was a psychopath, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. And I was worried that this was going to be a show where, you know, guns were used to solve problems.
But at some point, it's going to have to become Punisher War Journal. It is going to become where he has a list of bad men. Like at the moment, he's reluctantly doing this stuff because he turned out that he didn't get all the people behind what happened to him. And there's a bigger mystery. And in a way, that's kind of a cheat.
It is a cheat, but I think it's the best way to handle that.
Yeah, but
right?
Like if they ever do a follow-up, they can't do that again. Like it has to, like at the end of this, it doesn't set a spot for how they can go to be the Punisher still. Like how does he get back on the street and start taking down criminals? That's not going to happen to this character.
No.
Which again is interesting, but it just wasn't as gripping as I'd hoped it to be for me.
Oh, John Bernthal is exceptional.
Yeah.
I mean, just as the role, I mean, this is the perfect depiction of the Punisher we've ever seen on screen.
Once
I think
he gets
we've seen three people, right? We've seen Dolph Lundgren, we've seen Thomas Jane, and
Ray Stevenson.
And John
Dolph
Bernthal.
Lundgren doesn't really count.
Oh, okay, fine. but John Bernthal's absolutely pitch perfect. I mean, there is this grunt when he's fighting,
which is really weird, right?
It's a weird thing,
it
works.
Yeah, it comes like when he gets really into like berserker Hulk mode, he just starts grunting or screaming, and it's really low and guttural. It's quite odd.
No, and it's scary. I can imagine the person being the subject of that scream.
Yeah.
You would be terrified.
And a lot of his acting is looking shocked at what he has wrought, like covered in blood and just kind of staring and blinking. And it never gets old when he's doing that.
No.
And also getting shot in the left shoulder a lot. I think it's just his left shoulder takes all the beating.
I think that's the only aspect about him that's super, the fact that how quickly he heals.
Yeah, he's got Wolverine's powers going on
clearly,
here at certain
clearly.
Points.
So this for me wasn't necessarily your traditional superhero TV series, but I think it was a great example of how you can pull off a comic book series without without the superhero. I mean, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. works to a certain extent, but even they brought in those superpowered characters, even though they're not famous, right? They still have those superpowered characters, and they have Ghost Rider and all that stuff.
But also, their genesis is so tied into that kind
into
of stuff.
Into the Avengers.
They'd be pointless without it. There's no point doing NCI Marvel Universe.
Meanwhile, I think with Punisher, it's nice that Marvel can spin off in this direction, because I was worried that they were going to end up doing the whole, because, you know, after the Defenders, you've got Jessica Jones season 2 and Daredevil season 3 and Iron Fist season 2 and then maybe another season of Luke Cage and the Defenders, and everything is so tied in together that these 13 episodes feel like they're completely standalone.
Yeah, and Frank doesn't know the Night Nurse.
And yeah, thank you.
I was thinking at one point, it's like, are they going around to Rosario Dawson's house? It's like, oh, no, they're not.
No. Micro's going to stitch him up instead, right?
Yeah. Well, no, it was Curtis, his friend Curtis.
Oh, it was Curtis who came by and helped. Mm. Yeah.
And that's another great character that's played by Jason Orr Moore. It's a character who's lost his leg in war. And, like, I think putting the Punisher on it, maybe if I had to put a subtitle, maybe it was like, you know, because it is Punisher Begins Again. It's basically Punisher Begins Again, I think would have led to less expectation on my behalf. Because the scenes with Billy and Curtis, Frank's old war buddies, just having chats about, you know, where's Frank and all this kind of stuff. And the way things developed around that, I thought were really, really good.
When you say Punisher Begins Again, because we forgot to mention, the show actually picks off almost immediately after the events of
Daredevil Season 2,
where at the end of it, you see him get an envelope with the words Micro written on it, right?
And so,
and there's a tape or a CD or something in
which
the envelope.
Frank doesn't look at for 6 months.
No, clearly not.
Leading up to this series.
Clearly not. However, let me say something. The use of sound design and silences in the show are tremendous. Mm. There was a bit in the very first episode, which is a montage sequence that they showed us at San Diego Comic-Con, which is the opening, right? Where he's hunting down
the
remnants
of
the people who murdered his family. And there's one bit where it's a scene across the border of the United States, and you see him with a sniper rifle, and it's completely silent.
Yeah.
And I actually thought the streaming was messed up, and I actually kept reversing back
the sound was
because
broke.
I thought the sound was broken.
Yeah.
But actually, they keep doing that throughout the series when there are large explosions or when they're at war. And
there's
the way
very
silence
little loud
and music
gunfire.
Plays.
Yeah, there's very little loud gunfire. There's a lot of from silenced weapons. And there's another genius moment with a sniper rifle where someone's looking out a window and it doesn't go down the way you expect it to.
It was tremendous.
And I think that same episode, there's a scene with laser sights in a smoke-filled
room. Also amazing.
Yeah.
There's also this one bit where I think it's a flashback and there's some Pearl Jam. Is it Pearl Jam playing in the background?
It comes right after the best Bruce Springsteen joke in Marvel history. It's actually The White Buffalo is the name of the band, and it's a song called Wish It Were True. Because I wrote down, I thought it was Bruce Springsteen, and only when I went back to listen to it again, I was like, hang on a second.
I thought it was Pearl Jam. Yeah. And the way the song cuts off with the gunfire and the explosions and comes back in later, it's really cool, the kind of stuff they're doing with sound design.
Yeah, but I did think that scene also, it hurt it because they're outside shooting somewhere in a quarry and then all of a sudden they're in a factory. And
that's
I'm nitpicking, but it just felt weirdly, like, again, that's episode three. That is the Marvel cinematic, the Marvel Netflix universe, like number three is where you have the corridor scene.
The corridor fight.
And Frank had a fantastic corridor fight in Daredevil season 2 in the prison. And this, it's not quite that, and it has a different resonance. I mean, it's not supposed to be cool action. It's supposed to be horrifying war. But it still kind of just felt a little flat to me. Maybe it was the music, I don't know. But, like, I think Tyler Bates was involved in the music on this as well. He's listed in the beginning. And we should say the credits are probably the best Marvel credits we've had since Luke Cage, I think.
With also great, great music.
Yes.
I kept letting the credits play.
Yeah, because they didn't want to break the buffering on the video. But also, I think it's a good, like, it's not Western, country and Western, but it is kind of Western, westernized gangster music in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You're being nitpicky. Mm. I'm clearly in love with this show. Mm.
And I think,
how would you rate this?
See, I'm being nitpicky because by that point, maybe I was just worn down by having by the show a little bit. Like I said, like overlongness. So I was waiting for these threads need to tie up. And when I got one of those threads tied up, which was one of the vet stories, I was like, is that it? Because I really thought, like, the parallels were there to be drawn, you know, the Batman Joker thing was there.
But you see, I felt that the wrapping up of that vet story was an awakening for Frank when it happens, right? And Karen as well.
I don't know. I think, again, it's just, I think the characters was a the character Frank was a bit uneven at times too. It seems like he's getting over stuff and then he's not getting over stuff, or he's super competent, super on it, and then he's kind of almost a blubbering wreck at times. Now, I know he's messed up, but it felt a bit too seesaw-y for me in times.
So where would you rate this in the MNU, the Marvel Netflix universe?
Well, it's obviously better than Iron Fist. I still think, for me, Daredevil Season 1 is still the top of the pile, and Luke Cage and Jessica Jones are around after that. I think it comes in just around the same level as the Luke Cage and Jessica Jones for me.
Interesting.
And Luke Cage, the second half of Luke Cage is obviously a disappointment. Once you lose Cottonmouth, I think that show loses something very much. And Jessica Jones, while I loved it, while I watched it, I have trouble remembering everything that happened in it now. But Daredevil 1 sticks out as, like, getting to the suit and everything that went around that and the mystery of the Kingpin. It was just perfectly, it seemed perfectly laid out and perfectly paced. Whereas I think, like I said, this one suffered from Canada a little bit too much in the middle and just could have been a bit tighter for me.
So for me, this one is on par with Daredevil Season 1, I think. Yeah, I know. And then Jessica Jones comes a very close second.
I really have to say, I really liked Prince Caspian in this as well. It took me ages to figure out that A, that was Prince Caspian, and B, he was in Westworld, and that's why I was remembering his face. I had no clue that was him.
I forgot that he was in Westworld, right? And of course, we're talking about Billy Russo, right? Ben Barnes,
that's
right. You know, that was one of the most interesting things about this show, in that it's very difficult for you to pick a side, because there are times when you're not even on Frank's side.
Yeah.
Because everyone has done such horrible things, there is literally no black and white, with the exception of maybe Karen.
Who's whiter than white. Annoyingly white.
Yeah. But I think you need just one of those characters.
Yeah.
Just one of those characters. Marvel's The Punisher is streaming on Netflix as of this Friday. That's the 17th, usually around 3 p.m. our time, which is like midnight New York time. Los Angeles. Yeah. No, because it's 12 hours. So it would be midnight LA, right?
Was it? I thought it was New York. Depends on where the show is set. Okja was a weird time because it was Korea, but The Punisher lives in New York.
Yeah, let's just say in the evening in Malaysia, it starts streaming. You can catch it then. And of course, we want you to talk to us about it once you've binge-raced all 13 episodes. Let me tell you, this one is unlike other Netflix series because I think it's so horrific and brutal. Mm. It's a hard one to binge watch, right?
I think so. Don't watch it while you're eating your dinner.
Don't. Yeah.
Especially not spaghetti.
Let us know what you think. I'm on at Umar Pagan.
I'm on at McNasty Prime.
Don't forget, you can also email us on movies@bfm.my. You can check out our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/@themoviesmy. Talk to us everywhere. This is At The Movies on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.375%, APR 4.65%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. Pay 2.13% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 33.